And so it goes. Other variations occur in line 7, slain by. I don't think we would say slain by the bloody Piedmontese. Slain by the bloody Piedmontese. And then mother in line 8. Mother with infant down the rocks. We would not say mother. Mother with infant. English doesn't sound that way. And finally, in the last line, about which I'll have something else to say at the end of the lecture, the word early. Who having learnt thy way early may fly. Not who having learnt thy way early. Early. We don't hear it that way. In other words, there is a grid, and there are metric variations that might ruin or interfere with or vary the grid for one of three reasons. One, English demands variety. Two, poetry demands variety. Nothing is going to be the same consistently over and again. And three, something I've referred to in earlier lectures, as a script for performance, the poem invites you, invites us, as a reader, as a reciter, to make certain choices while prohibiting us certain others. You simply can't say mother. That's not an option. Mother. The metrical details that I've talked about here in specific detail are complemented by three other phenomena in the poem. One, its sounds. Two, its structure. And three, its syntax, that is, the word order. If you look at the rhyme words in the poem, you notice something either unique or certainly extraordinary. Instead of a major alternation, the poem, which is an Italian sonnet, is filled at the line ends with a single predominant sound. An Italian sonnet rhymes A, B, B, A, B, B, A. More of this will come in subsequent lectures. And then in the sestet, either two or three other rhymes. But if you listen to this sonnet, what you get is long O sounds throughout. Bones, cold, old, stones, groans, fold, rolled, moans. And then only in the sestet do you get a single other sound. They, sway, weigh, along with so, grow, and woe. The O is the predominant sound throughout. And in fact, that O sound begins early in the poem. Avenge, O Lord. Which is another reason, I think, to stress that O right there, that command, that O. That's the musical tone, that's the tonic of this whole piece. The predominant sound, in other words, throughout the poem, is that of a moan. And the last word in the poem is woe. And this helps us to realize that the whole poem traces Milton's angry, hostile commands to God across a plane that ends not in rage, but in sadness. Normally, we expect a break in a sonnet at the end of line 8. And here's where I'm going to say something about the structure of the poem. But here, the break and the change of tone occur in line 10, at which point Milton is hopeful that something positive in the future might develop to atone for the deaths of the martyred saints. Groans and moans are replaced by grow and woe. Even within this structure, we notice something peculiar but Miltonic in the poem's sentences. Notice how the majority of the lines are enjambed. That is, they run on. They continue past their ends to go into the next line. So, for example, line 1, line 3, line 5, and 6, and 7, and 9, whose bones lie scattered, kept thy truth so pure of old when all our fathers worshipped stocks and stones. In thy book record their groans who were thy sheep, and in their ancient fold slain by the bloody Piedmontese that rolled mother with infant down the rocks. Milton doesn't want us to pause at the end of a line. He wants us to pause in the middle of a line. There's something impulsive here, or propulsive, about the meter. Why? he wants to produce, I think quite clearly, the effect of the tumultuous rolling of the slaughtered Protestants as their bodies fall down the mountain.